Good morning, everyone, and happy Sabbath to everybody who's joined us today. Glad to be with you. I hope your Sabbath is going very well, and we're just glad that you can join us in person or through the means of our web hookup. We're just glad to be with you on this Sabbath day. Today, I want to cover a topic that is going to probably be very in a sense, detailed. There will be, I'm going to be reading a lot of quotes today, and I hope that I can read them in a way that you will appreciate the quotes, that you understand them, and that you'll be excited about what the information that they present to us. Because I think it is a very exciting topic, what we're going to talk about today. And any of you that have checked on the website, no, the title is The Science of Belief. Modern science has revealed a universe of absolute wonder. Wonder in the sense of awe, astonishment, surprise, and admiration to all who dig into it. We see wonder all around us as we look at how the universe was created, how it was designed just right for life, and the incredible complexity of even the simplest of life forms. Each year that goes by brings new scientific evidence of wonder. Facts for which there are essentially no explanations without God. No believable way around the wonder that we see, the detail, the incredible design, the futuristic thinking that went into making all that we see. Today I want to cover four topics that point us to the undeniable existence of a creator God. And I'm going to be quoting out of a book today, and it's the book title is called Counting to God, written by a gentleman named Douglas L, E-L-L. And this is the cover of the book, just so you can see. I've got the quotes already in my message, so we don't need to keep the book. I've broken down, simplified a little bit some of the points that Douglas L put in his book. He had seven points that he goes over in how the science points us to God. And I broke some of them into, or I actually combined a couple of them, so that we are going to cover four points actually in the message today, just to try to make it fit into the time that we have. We could probably give multiple messages on this topic, but we'll try to stick this into one message. Here are the topics we're going to talk about. Number one, the universe had a beginning and has been fine-tuned for life. The laws of physics, it has been discovered, are actually tuned specifically to support life. Number two, life is a miracle. The simplest organisms contain staggering complexity. Number three, the technology of life is amazing. All life runs on the same operating system, using something we all know, most of us have heard the term before, DNA. And number four, our Earth is special. Let's begin with the first one. Let me just take a look real quick at the time so I can kind of judge, okay, where we're at. The first one, the universe had a beginning. What the scientists many times will refer to as a first cause. Now, this may not seem all that unusual to you and I that believe what we read in the book of Genesis, but from the days of Aristotle in the 300s BC to Sir Isaac Newton in the 1700s, the prevalent understanding of the universe was that it was infinite and eternal, which means they didn't believe that there was ever a starting point to our universe. Following this, in the 1900s, Albert Einstein came up with a way to explain how gravitational fields could have an effect on space and time. Now, this was a major paradigm shift in the way the world was understood. And it actually took quite a while for the scientific world of Einstein's day to accept fully his theories, as they call them, about relativity. It actually was Einstein came out with this theory in 1905, believe it or not, and it was still not totally accepted. They were still doing scientific experiments to prove another theory that went against Einstein's 45 years later. So in 1950, scientists were still conducting experiments that did not accept Einstein's theories of relativity. Well, it came out that Einstein was right. He had the theory of relativity and then another theory they call special relativity. And even Einstein had a problem because several pointed out to him that his theory, when taken in as a whole, pointed to the fact that the universe had to begin, had to start. So it actually documents that he fudged some of the numbers in his theory to make it look like the universe was eternal, because he wasn't quite ready for what his theories pointed to, that there was an actual first cause, because so much, you had, what, over 2,000, 3,000 years of time that went by where this was not an accepted idea, that the universe began at a certain point in time. Now, as I mentioned, we already know this. We have this given to us in the book of Genesis. Let's just real quickly turn over. You can go right to the beginning of your Bible, and we're told from the start that the universe had a beginning. Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Very plain, isn't it? In the beginning, God created. But see, the problem is with that word God. No one wants to admit that a being created all that we see around us, and that maybe we might owe something to that being, that we might have to maybe follow that being and the moral code that he presents to us. So many hold on to, and still even to this day, hold on to the theories of Darwin that hold this, that life just evolved by chance, and that time and the process of natural selection have produced all that we see. Their religion of scientism has won the day. That is beginning to change. Let me quote a passage here early in the book Counting to God, where he talks about this idea of Darwin versus even the mention of intelligent design. Quoting from his book, quote, "Other than a few religious institutions, it is generally impossible for a person who publicly challenges Darwin's theories to become a tenured professor. The popular press, who you might hope, if they truly understood the subject, would embrace freedom of choice and wonder, has instead viciously mocked proponents of design in the universe. A federal court actually ruled in a case, Kitzmiller versus Dover Area School District in 2005, that it violates the Constitution of the United States when a local school board informs high school students that intelligent design is an alternative to Darwin's theory of evolution by natural selection." So as recent as 2005, about 20 years ago, and this book was written in 2014, 15 or like 10 years before, this court case had said you cannot tell high school students anything other than Darwin's theory of evolution. Going on with the quote, intelligent design studies, and is now talking about what intelligent design attempts to do. Intelligent design studies biological systems for signs of intelligence. It does this largely by measuring the probability that biological systems could have ever been formed by accident. And that's part of the reason I believe that he titled this book Counting to God, because he goes through multiple times over and over and over, showing the probability, and it's very, very low, that all of the things that we have around us, the universe, the planet, the plants, the animals, us, happened by chance. It's a very, very low number. But scientism, as he calls this modern belief that is propagated by the scientists of today, mocks the idea of intelligent design, yet at the same time that it mocks the idea of intelligent design, supports the efforts of SETI, S-E-T-I, where they are looking for other life in the universe. How? By looking for patterns that would signify intelligence. So they're okay with looking for that intelligent design as long as it's coming from aliens in outer space. Archaeology also uses our ability to recognize complexity and see that as design. So when they're doing a dig, I've never had the experience of being on one, but if you have, you know that when you start to dig down and you find maybe a piece of pottery, or maybe you find part of a building, you typically don't assume immediately that that just happened by chance, that the stairs just happened to be here, that stairs just happened to form out of the dirt, or that a piece of pottery just came into being by itself. You look at that and say, oh, we have a theory that some people probably made this building or these stairs or this piece of pottery. We don't assume that it just came into being on its own. Yet that is what scientism teaches, that all of the stuff around us just happened by chance, and it had to have billions of years to occur, and it just happened and came together. There was no design, there was no purpose. We are beings without any purpose on this earth. It wasn't until 1965 that our modern science actually caught up with Genesis 1, verse 1. Two scientists, one named Arno Penzias and the other Robert Wilson, made an accidental discovery of what later came to be known as cosmic microwave background radiation. They weren't looking for it. They were looking for something totally different. And they kept having a problem, they thought, with their instrument, because they kept having this interference, and they kept trying to tune it and tune it and tune it. And after so much time went by, they finally realized that they had made a discovery that pointed to the beginning of the universe. This cosmic microwave background radiation was a signal, a relic from the creation of the universe. They had discovered verifiable proof that our universe began in a single moment. They were awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics in the year 1978. As our technologies have advanced, other scientists have also proven that the galaxies we can see through telescopes and space probes are moving away from us at tremendous speeds. This points to a beginning when they were all close together. And I won't go through, there's many more details we could talk about on that, but we won't go through them in this message. But just think of an expanding balloon. If you're putting air into a balloon and it's continuing to expand, but it began very small, it began very close to itself, and then air began to go into it and it just continues to grow out. That's what they've discovered our universe is doing, and that points them to the fact that there was a beginning. Again, quoting from Counting to God, quote, assuming then that the universe had a cause, we are forced to accept that some being or something outside of our universe caused it to come into being. Something that does not exist in our reality created our reality, end quote. Scientists have also discovered, as I mentioned at the beginning, that our universe has constants of physics that have been finely tuned to support life. This is the second part of our first point. They have discovered at least 31 constants of physics in our universe that are finely tuned to support life. Quoting again from Counting to God, as far as we know, the 31 or so fundamental constants of physics that have been set just right for life are unrelated. There's no reason to think any one of them can be calculated from any of the others. Yet somehow, they are all just about perfectly right. The analogy is given of walking into a control room for the universe and finding that all the dials had been set precisely for life. You would not think it was a lucky accident. You would not think that this just happened to happen by chance, that all these unrelated constants of physics, totally unrelated to each other, but each of them, when you look at them, are set perfectly to support life in this universe. How did that happen? Increasingly, they are not able to explain or run away from this fact. Now let's move on to talk about the miracle of life. The miracle of life. And we're just going to keep on building. I think as we go through this message, you're going to see that this evidence just stacks up on top of each other to where you cannot run away from the idea that there is an incredible being, there is an incredible God family, as we know, that created all that we see. And that has incredible levels of intelligence that we cannot even fathom. We cannot even begin to understand it. We're just beginning to unravel some of these mysteries even now in the year of 2025. Let's talk about the miracle of life. Out of 500 different types of amino acids, all of life uses the same 20 different amino acids to build the cells needed for life. So out of 500, there are 20 amino acids that are used to build the cells that we need to live. This includes the ability to properly link the amino acids together into proteins, to store the code of life and the information to assemble all of these atoms into the right three-dimensional shape and the right order. Scientists have no explanation for how this came to be. There's no way they can explain this because there's so much complexity. As I said, you start calculating the probabilities of 20 different amino acids having to come together in a three-dimensional matrix, having to be bound together just right in the right order, or else they don't work for them to actually do anything to build life. Again, quoting from Counting to God, he gives this quote from a scientist named Eugene Koonin. He's a recognized expert in the field of evolutionary and computational biology. Sounds pretty complicated. He wrote this in 2011 as part of a status report on their search for this, for the cause or the reason behind this miracle life. And he says this: despite many interesting results to its credit, when judged by the straightforward criterion of reaching or even approaching the ultimate goal, which is the origin of life field. Let me back up. When judged by the straightforward criterion of reaching or even approaching the ultimate goal, which is the origin of life field, is a failure. We still do not have even a plausible, coherent model, let alone a validated scenario for the emergence of life on Earth. They don't have any clue how life began on this Earth. Are you sensing a pattern here? First, they have no clue how the universe began. And now they admit they have no clue how life could have begun. Once again, we have a cheat sheet to the origin of life. It's called the Book of Genesis. Let's go back again to the Bible. Genesis 1, verse 11, and we'll see the origin of life given to us. Genesis 1, verse 11. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And drop down to verse 20. Then God said, "Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens." So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded, according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." And then dropping down again to verse 24, we'll read, "Then God said, 'Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind.' And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth.'" So here we're given the origin of life on this earth. God created it. God made it happen. And now science is just finally beginning to see the incredible complexity that is in this life that God created, that God made. Let's quote again from Counting to God, where Douglas L. describes the wonderful detail and the complexity God created in this world. As I said, they're just beginning now to see it, to be able to get down to the atomic level, to see how all this works. He writes this: "Yet when you stop to ponder exactly what life is and how it works, you begin to realize how precious life is. From the perspective of engineering alone, life is an amazing chemical machine. It is a chemical machine that possesses the ability to reproduce, to make copies of itself, to make other machines of the same type. That is astounding. As advanced as our science and technology are, we human beings are not even close to building a different kind of chemical machine that can reproduce without assistance. Sure, we can tweak existing forms of life to enhance crop yields or obtain other benefits. But that is just a relatively slight modification to an existing form of life, an existing chemical machine. We do not have the ability to create from scratch a new design for a chemical machine that can reproduce. We are not even close to having that ability. And that's the ability they see in life. That's the miracle they see as they study the mechanics of life. Let's look at one of these. One of the simplest life forms on the earth is called blue-green algae. Yes, a very simple form of life, isn't it? Something that you might find on the seashore under a rock or on top of a rock. Blue-green algae. Let's consider the complexity that God placed in this simplest of life forms. Like I said, it's one of the simplest life forms on this planet. Okay, here's what this can do. It can use photosynthesis, which means to convert the sun, take the sun and be able to do things with it, as well as being able to convert nitrogen into organic compounds, which allows it to enter a sterile environment and start growing. Blue-green algae average about 2,000 genes and a relatively small genome. Now get this, a relatively small genome of 1.6 million letters of DNA. Each of the 2,000 genes contains the code for building a specific protein. The odds of this happening randomly, by accident, are extremely low. Very, very low. As science discovers and documents these miracles of life all around us, it becomes increasingly impossible to believe in evolution. The fact is, and it becomes more and more evident the further we go into this study, into this message, it takes greater faith to believe the Darwinian theories about the origin of life than in a creator God. Now let's go on. Let's talk about some of the technology that they have discovered that God placed into life, into our bodies, into the world around us, the plants, the animals, the elements. Now, before the advances of technology allowed us to see the incredible detail of the human body, scientists just thought the stuff inside our cells was something they called protoplasm, which they described as a jelly-like goo that did all of life's work. Now, with the wonders of the technology and the ability for us to see more clearly into the human body, we know that the human body has 30 trillion cells. Each of our 30 trillion cells is like a complex three-dimensional city. Each of those 30 trillion cells, think of each one of those as a city the size of New York or London, with libraries, factories, and highways. Let me quote again from the book Counting to God. And Douglas L. quotes from a famous biologist named Michael Denton. And he tries to describe and help people to visualize what each of these 30 trillion cells looks like. So I'd like to read this and just think of it in your mind's eye as I read it. of the incredible design and detail that went into this. Quoting from this Michael Denton, "To grasp the reality of life as it has been revealed by molecular biology, we must magnify a cell 1,000,000,000 times until it is 20 kilometers in diameter and resembles a giant airship large enough to cover a great city like London or New York. What would we then see would be an object of unparalleled complexity and adaptive design. On the surface of the cell, we would see millions of openings, like the portholes of a vast spaceship, opening and closing to allow a continual stream of materials to flow in and out. If we were to enter one of these openings, we would find ourselves in a world of supreme technology and bewildering complexity. We would see endless, highly organized corridors and conduits branching in every direction away from the perimeter of the cell, some leading to the central memory bank in the nucleus, other to assembly plants and processing units. The nucleus itself would be a vast spherical chamber more than a kilometer in diameter, resembling a geodesic dome inside of which we would see all neatly stacked together in ordered arrays, the miles of coiled chains of DNA molecules, a huge range of products and raw materials would shuttle along all the manifold conduits in a highly ordered fashion to and from all the various assembly plants in the outer regions of the cell." How can we deny a creator when we see this kind of complexity, this kind of design, down to the cell level in our bodies? As David wrote in Psalm 139:14, write this down, I'll read it to you. Psalm 139:14, he wrote, "I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well." And David wasn't able to see at the microscopic level that we can see. He could see and just look out and look at your hand and look at the design of your hand, the way the fingers move, the way all the joints work together. I mean, just the things that we can see with the naked eye are amazing. Another thing that has been discovered is that all of life, and ask yourself how this could have happened by chance, all of life runs on the same digital operating system. It stores its code in long molecules of DNA and has machines that transfer or transcribe DNA information to a slightly simpler molecule called RNA. Most of us have heard about RNA because of the pandemic. We've had a vaccination or attempted vaccination that used this technology. They called it mRNA, messenger RNA. Well, they hijacked the technology that God had created. This operating system of life, we could call it, instead of Mac OS like or iOS like we have on our phones, we could call it DNA OS, version 1. And there's only one version of it, and all of life runs on that version. Now, ask yourself, if all this came about by chance, how is it that everything uses the same digital operating system? Wouldn't we have had, like, maybe millions of those, or at least hundreds of those that developed? No, we have one. And interestingly enough, a piece of DNA from a human cell can be inserted into a bacteria's cell, and the information will be successfully read. And it works the other way too. A bacteria's cell, DNA from a bacteria's cell, can be inserted into a human cell, and it can read that DNA That's just amazing. That is amazing that that DNA can go, can be put anywhere and be read by the cell. They have discovered incredible technology in DNA. It serves as an incredible storage technology that it far advances beyond anything we have today even. It's incredibly small, as DNA is written with groups of atoms. A single gram, so think of this, a single gram of DNA can hold 700 terabytes of data. 700 terabytes of data. A spoonful of DNA. So think of that, a spoonful, whatever you know, a spoon, can store the complete instructions for every species that has ever existed, with enough room to left over to store every book ever written. That is what I call storage. And I would bet you that Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, all these big companies would love to have storage like that. Let's read a quote about this from Counting to God, about our DNA, about how our DNA works. Your DNA is the code used to build you. And I admit I'm a technology guru. I work in technology. So I guess maybe I'm a little more excited about this topic than some of you might be. But DNA is a code used to build you, me, and everything around us. It takes a lot of DNA to build a human being. About 3.2 billion subunits, or letters, of DNA. Almost every one of the 30 trillion cells in your body has 46 chromosomes. You get 23 from your from one side, from your father, and you get 23 from your mother. These are all linked end to end with like an impossibly long series of plastic connecting blocks. And like I said, they have the probability, they have calculated the probability of this complexity happening by chance. And it is such a small number that most people don't even accept it as a possibility. The more detail you study about DNA, the more amazing it becomes. God has put in incredible capabilities into this very small part of life. DNA uses the following technologies: information retrieval, splicing technology. So it's able to take different parts of DNA code, and where it needs it, it can say, I'll just take this piece and splice it over here, and splices it together. It has molecular delivery trucks. It's a four-letter genetic code. The information is able to be compressed. So DNA, the cells have the capability to compress DNA. It has shredding technology. So it's able to get rid of bad pieces of DNA or RNA that it discovers. It has the technology built in to detect that and destroy those. It has replication technology, and it has repair technology. So it actually, as it's building, as the body is building something, or a cell, I guess I should say, is building something from DNA, as it's building it, it is actually going back and proofreading the DNA to make sure that it's correct. And so then it's able to eliminate. If it finds any errors, it's able to repair those errors and fix them as it goes. And then it has another process that it runs after it's finishing building a chain of DNA that also checks for accuracy. So God placed incredible levels of technological complexity into life. Many of you may have heard a term called irreducible complexity. And what that means is that things are put together in such a way that they all had to be there at the same time for this thing to work, whatever it is you're looking at, that you see this complexity, that if you take one part of it away, the whole thing will not work. The whole thing falls apart. And it's a proof against the evolution theory that, you know, slowly organisms developed over time and added this thing and added that thing and then added that thing until finally they could crawl out of the ocean on legs or something. No, they're seeing things that had to be designed and created at the same time together to work. One of those things is down at the bacterial level, and it's something they call bacterial flagellum, and it's basically a molecular propeller that bacteria use to move. So here's a propeller that's built into a piece of bacteria that allows it to move. It's a rotary engine that can go up to 10,000 revolutions per minute, or RPMs. A variety of the parts that make up this engine requires 30 to 40 genes to build. If you take away any one of these genes, the flagellum engine, or the bacterial flagellum, will not work. In 2013, scientists discovered another species of bacteria with an even more complex engine than they discovered on the previous bacteria. This one has a molecular propeller. Now get this, a molecular propeller that consisted of 7 coordinated motors and a hexagonal array separated by gear wheels. Did you get that? A propeller made out of 7 coordinated motors and a hexagonal array separated by gear wheels. Now, how did that just happen over millions or billions of years? Impossible. Let's move to our final point in this message, and that is about our Earth. As they study more and more about the properties of our universe and the galaxy that we're a part of, they have realized how special the Earth is. In March 2009, the U.S. launched the Kepler Space Observatory to look for planets. The idea behind that was send this thing up into space and let's look for other planets that are like the Earth. And of course, their idea is, well, we just want to show that we're not special. There's other Earth-like stuff out there in this universe, and we're just one of many possible places where life could have evolved. Well, scientists are beginning to realize how special the Earth is. Let's go through some of these things that makes our Earth special. Our sun is part of our galaxy, is in the part of our galaxy best suited for life. They call this the galactic habitable zone. And it's a zone where the sun and the planets that are revolving around it is in a part of the galaxy that does not have as much disruption or supernovas and other things like that happening that could kill all life in that galaxy or in that solar system. The sun is just the right size. It's big, but not too big. And the reason that's a good thing is because the bigger a star is, the faster it burns out. Only about 10% of the stars they have discovered have the right mass for life. 10%. Just think about that. There are billions, maybe trillions of stars in the universe, and only 10% have the right mass for life. Estimates are that our sun has about 5 billion more years. Now, how they know that, I can't tell you. I mean, they estimate that our sun had about a 10 billion year lifespan. How they know that, I don't know. But they estimate we have another 5 billion years of relative stability. So I think we have plenty of time. We don't have to worry about that hap the sun becoming a black hole anytime soon. Also, our solar system is special because the orbits of all the planets are fairly circular, and they're spaced apart to reduce interference. So we don't have planets that are so close to each other that the gravitational fields of those planets could cause problems for others. Jupiter and the other outer planets, because of their size, especially with the case of Jupiter, often protect the Earth from comets and other objects that could hit us, but instead they're sucked in by the huge gravitational field of Jupiter, and they're stopped. Jupiter is about 318 times the mass of Earth. It acts like a huge vacuum cleaner to clear out dangerous objects that could hit Earth. Computer simulations estimate that without Jupiter, comet strikes on Earth would be thousands of times more frequent. And if you think about the amount of power that is emitted by what would seem to you to be a small comet, if we had thousands of them hitting us, I doubt there would be a very habitable planet on this Earth. We would have to live underground or something, I don't know. But it would not be very pleasant. Earth is near the inner edge of what they call the solar habitable zone, and that's defined as the zone where liquid water can exist. Its orbit falls within that zone where the temperature has always been right for water. So the planet is in a certain part of the solar system, the right distance from the sun, to support water always being liquid. Also, the moon. The moon is very unusual. It is the largest moon in the solar system. The moon keeps the axis of Earth's rotation at about the same angle to its orbit around the sun. It prevents Jupiter from causing large changes in the tilt of Earth's axis. It provides tides, and as it orbits the Earth, it's easy to see on the ocean and even on solid ground. And I didn't know this until looking at this book, that even on solid ground, it has tide swings of about 8 inches. So the ground actually even moves because of the gravitational pull of the moon. Again, I'd like to do one more quote from Counting to God in this section about that our Earth is very special. Douglas L. writes this: "When you add it all up, I think the evidence is strong that our Earth is rare and special. Earth is in the right galaxy, is located the right distance from the center of the galaxy, travels a safe path through the galaxy, has the right sun, is in the right solar system, is in the right place in the solar system, and has the right moon. Do we think this all happened by chance?" Let's go over to the book of Job, where we'll see this wasn't by chance, that this was by design, by our Creator. Job chapter 38. Job chapter 38, God is talking to Job. Here, this is near the end of the book. He asks Job a series of questions. Job 38, verse 4, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone?" Dropping down. "Can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion? Can you bring out Maseroth in its season? Or can you guide the Great Bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion over the earth? So very clearly we're told here that God laid the foundations of this planet. He put this planet exactly where he wanted it to be. And he determines the ordinances of the heavens. He determines the way the planets move in this solar system. He's created the laws, these laws of physics that we discussed earlier, where we have these constants that they can't figure out how these constants came to be, but they know they're there and they support life. We have seen today the wonders that God has done in his creative genius through the eyes of science today. The advances in our ability to see what God has done in creating life, all the way down to the cellular level, down to the design and language of DNA, should make us stand in awe of him. These recent discoveries are just the tip of the iceberg. As in every aspect of the world around us, we see the magnificent intellectual power of God and the incredible design that was put into every aspect of this universe, down to the minutest of details. There's design, there's complexity beyond what we can even think or imagine. God is the first and only cause for this universe that we inhabit and this planet that we enjoy. Let's conclude in Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 6. Turn over to Nehemiah chapter 9. We'll conclude the message here. Nehemiah 9 verse 6. You alone are the Lord. You have made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their host, the earth and everything on it, the seas and all that is in them, and you preserve them all. The host of heaven worships you. Join me in prayer as we conclude. Father in heaven, we come to you just, as I said, we're in awe and wonder at what we see that you created, that you made. Father, from the smallest blue-green algae on this planet to some of the largest animals we know of, Father, we see your hand. We see your incredible intelligence and the design that you put into the life that we live, the life that we enjoy. Father, the many things around us, Father, that we can certainly see and marvel at. We marvel at the smallest detail that you've put into the smallest of things. We marvel at our own bodies and how they work, and the 30 trillion cells. The wonders, Father, of the DNA that you've made and developed, that you used in every form of life. Father, thank you for allowing us to have this kind of information. Father, we know you gave us this information way ahead of time. Way ahead of time, if people would just have the faith and have the willingness, Father, to believe in you as their creator, and you as their designer, and you as the one that gives them every good and perfect gift. So, Father, we give you thanks for this day, this Sabbath, and we ask you to bless the noon meal that we'll be enjoying, that you'll bless that food, and Father, bless our fellowship and bless the remaining time that we have on this Sabbath day. Help us to truly honor it. Help us to fellowship and enjoy each other's company, and truly, Father, rest and enjoy the Sabbath that you've given to us. And again, we thank you for the ability to be together, for this the technology we have to reach so many people. We give you thanks for all of this and ask it in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.